The following is a paid program, and the opinions expressed within it are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of KACO Radio or Mulman Media Management and staff.
Welcome, this is Joe Poe
and Mary Helen Deere
hosting Kiowa Talk, created by the late J.T. Kumbai. Our sponsors for Kiowa Talk here on Saturday on New Country 98.5 FM, KACO, Apache, Lawton, Fort Sill, R. Kiowa's for a Better Future, District 5 Legislator Anita Johnson, District 7 Legislator Jacob Sotai, and recently announced candidate for Kiowa Chairman Lawrence Spotted Bird. So here opening the show, we've got the only Leonard Kozad Jr., who's going to give the open prayer for the show. Leonard, go ahead and take it away.
Before I pray, I want to say thank you for letting the Kiowas use that facility down in Chicken Shake. But I thank all the radio station, bottom of my heart, what they're doing for the Kiowa Nation. And I know it's going to be another good day. So let us pray. I'm cold play a donkey go honey tie they go. They go key, they sound go, they go pie ball, they sound go. They go on our own time a dog, he go. Don't go be, they go, don't go right dogs, I dog, he go no. They go no grain bone. They go they go hang the dog. They go go no, they go be they can't I dog go. They go no on our own time a dog, he go. I'm coin go go. No go, I thought Sean, Rosie Marie, Kozad go. I got a cope on my no sister, Kathy Kozad, people not forget go. I got a cope on my dog, giggle. No go, I'm going to Tom, dog, told her, they're going to take the dog, giggle, hold it, I get dog. They go, go, no, they go, go, eight times, go, no, one time, a dog, giggle. They go, go. Only time I get go home and dog, giggle. No, go, they go being they can't hear dog, go. No, go, I get going, ain't dog side dog, giggle. Man, how you go, ain't I going, Tom, dog, go, so go. They go, go, being they go, eight times, go, no, one time, go. They go, go. No, go, say, Joey, go, sister, Mary Helen Deere, go, 100 times, they go, I think, dog, go, ain't go. Radio show go. Hey go go. Hey go get. Hey go no one old time a dog. He goes solo great date though. Thank you for another beautiful day, dear God. Thank you for all the Kiowa people in Oklahoma. Thank you for everything. Bless our people and our elders, dear God, and our children. I ask you your son Jesus Christ. Amen.
Thank you. Thank you, Leonard, for that wonderful prayer, and we'll talk to you here after a while. Okay, our next portion of the show is the Kiowa Elder of the Week, which is Franna Cobbin Flying Man. And Mary Helen Deer has this part of the show. So, Mary Helen, you go ahead and take it away.
Frienda, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mary Helen.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad to have you on. I haven't spoken to you in person. Now we get to talk over the radio. So I haven't seen you in a while. So how have you been?
I have been good. I have ailments every now and then. And so I'm dealing with that and trying to handle all my family issues and great things and other things.
Yeah.
So I stay pretty busy.
Well, good. Good for you. Before we get into the regular part of the interview, I just happened to be looking at Facebook the other day and saw you had a request. Why don't you tell us about that request? Now that you're on the radio, more people will hear about it.
Okay. Are you talking about our grandson?
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you. First, let me thank you for asking me, Mary Helen, to be part of your program, the program today. And I want to thank my brother, Leonard, for the prayer this morning. I wasn't aware of Kathy and all of the issues that you're having. So my prayers and condolences are with you and the family, and praying that for healing, for all of that to be occurring for all of our people, including your family. Yes, the other day I had a prayer request, and for good health, I have a grandson who is actually the grandson of my late brother Norman Cobbin, and Norman's oldest daughter Corey is the mother of Casey Thompson, and Casey is the quarterback for the University of Texas. I know that we're all Sooners. I went to graduate school at OU. The older boy, Kendall, graduated from OU. I'm sorry?
Not all of us are Sooners. I graduated from the University of Texas.
Oh, right. Now, you know, I'm a Sooner, but when you have your child, your grandson playing and at his position, and he is the quarterback, and it. You know, they pushed him in probably about the second or third game. And he got his hand hurt when they played OU down in Dallas. And his hand was stretched, the tendons and everything around his finger and his index finger. And they're stretched, and he could barely close his hand. And that's his throwing hand. So my prayer request not only was for him, but all of the other young men and women who participate in our sports, not only at that level in a university, but the high school and middle school levels. You know, when watching the sports and football, basketball, all of them, as we are sports fans for many schools in many areas, you know, you worry about what happens. And I know the culture of the college university level, because Norman's two grandsons both played at that level, and of course Casey's playing now. So it is difficult, and I ask for prayers not only for his health. He's at Texas in Austin. And he loves the school, loves his program, his academic program. But the sports side of it, you know, he loves football. And he's a hard worker and everything. But I see that there's so much involved. And I was worried about not only the health, but also the guidance and the vision for these young people as they go through not only school, but also the athletic side, because it's such a huge industry anymore in college sports. Norman, my brother, passed away when Casey was just two, and he did not get to see him, although he helped to raise Kendall, the older one. Kendall went to OU, and of course Casey went to Texas. So we're very, very, we follow him. Daryl, my husband, and I are the grandparents, basically. My sister-in-law was an only child, so she didn't have anybody really, and her folks were gone already. So we're a small family, and so we jump in as we do, not only with my own brother's family, but with my cousins, because many of them have passed on the same way. So I just ask for prayers for young people, for Casey. He was he needed some help, and we set out to help him, as we should do. But I did ask for prayers, and I appreciate we've had a huge response for Casey. And they're all, a lot of them are Oklahoma Sooners, but they're all there praying for Casey because he's Kiowa.
Well, and wasn't he up for some kind of, wasn't there some kind of voting about him?
Yes, he's out. It's called the Davy O'Brien Award that they pose. It lasts throughout football season. And, you know, he did well until he got hurt during the OU game. But what happens is, and he's a great, in my opinion, he's a great, and I'm the grandma, so I think he's wonderful. But he did well, and then that happened. But they still, because he broke a lot of records, he broke a lot of Big 12 records and matched other records that were done in just a few games. The politics is so thick that, you know, you have to rise above them. And he's biracial. His father is Charles Thompson. Corey, my niece, and Casey is 1/8 Kiowa. And he's been, the boys were, they live in a culture of sports and home and school and academics. You know, Casey's already got his degree, yet he's just now starting as the quarterback. And he's working on his master's degree at Texas. So we're real proud of him, and we appreciate any of the support that we get from our people. And I in particular, because I'm a Kiowa, I wanted to tell my folks, and they all responded exactly like I thought they would, which is they know us. Casey's a young man in a different area. And with people that we don't know. And as I was taught in our traditional ways, my grandma used to get stuff and she'd pray over some of the stuff. She put on my buckskin dress because I grew up dancing. She did everything. And wherever I've worked, and I've worked a lot of places in the United States, you know, she always said, you work with a lot of people. Be sure, pray over it. And do what you know to do. And that's how I feel about Casey. And Casey is the one who called us and asked us to do this. So I did ask, and I didn't know any, you know, I wasn't a Facebook person because it's complicated. But, and I can only do a few things. But when I did this, I got my daughter involved and said, and of course they're fans and she's real close to Casey. But we've just appreciated all of the wonderful support we're getting from our Native people, not just Kiowas, but from all over. And we really appreciate it. And we ask for your continued prayers, not only for Casey, but for all of the young men and women who participate at all levels of sports and athletics.
Well, we talked about a little bit, touched on, you know, how you were taught. And so let's go into that. You know, whenever Indians meet somebody else, we say, well, who's your folks? So tell the people out there. I know.
Okay.
Who's your
okay.
folks?
Okay. Well, I'm Branda Cobbin Flyingman, and I'm a Kiowa. And my husband, Daryl Flyingman, is Cheyenne. And my Kiowa name is Sawtobedo. It's the holder, keeper of the pipe. And I was given that name through my dad's family. He was raised by Sawtobedo, his grandma. She was the youngest daughter of State Dainde, our war chief, Satanta, I think they say in the books. But that's who I'm named after, and I've been carrying her name since I was a young woman. My parents are Frank and Ida Botone Cobbin. I had one older sibling, and that was Norman, and Matthew Norman Cobbin, who took his heavenly journey in 2003, 18 years ago. So that's why I was talking about Casey and all of the grandkids and all of my cousins' grandkids who've lost their parents, and we're glad to do that. My grandpa and grandmother on both my mom and dad's side, my dad's dad, my grandpa Lon Oppitone, and we always called him Grandpa Lon, but he was enrolled Norman Cobbin. He was the oldest son of our last chief Oppitone. And just a sidebar on that, because I really didn't know a lot till I got to be older and comprehended it. I was too silly and goofy, I guess. But, you know, my Grandpa Lon was in World War One, and when he came home from Europe back then, he was the chief Oppitone. They had a dance, 3-day dance, and his aunt composed a song for him. And that song today is our Kiowa flag song. The family gave it over to the tribe at that point in time. And there were some more words added. It's a beautiful song, and we hear it all the time. So I appreciate that, but I'm proud of that. And I really understand that background. My dad's mother was Eunice White Buffalo Cobbin, and Grandma Eunice was the daughter of Sato Bedo, who I was mentioning a while ago. And she was the youngest daughter of State Dainde or Satanta. On my mother's side, I wrote this down kind of. My mother's side, mom's dad, my grandpa Matthew Botone, who was the youngest of his brothers, and he comes from a big family, was a pastor in the United Methodist Church. He pastored many of our churches in our part of the state, in Kiowa country. And he was very active, along with my grandma. My grandmother was Hazel Lone Wolf Botone. She's the oldest child of D.K. Lone Wolf and Ida Wansi. She had all of my family. I have a big family, so I was going to say a little bit about them. But I will say this about D.K., Grandpa D.K. Lone Wolf. He was the nephew of Chief Lone Wolf, and the chief had lost his son, who was about 17 years old in some kind of skirmish. So my grandpa D.K. and my grandma Ida Wansi, they went to school at Carlisle. And when he came back home, he was the chief took my great grandpa under his arm and wing and took him with him every place he went. And he just basically adopted him as his son, because the old man Chief Lone Wolf had only that one son. But my great-grandpa D.K., he helped him in Washington, you know, the Jerome Treaty and all of those different treaties that were signed. And then he went to not only talk with him and for him, but also he helped him understand and interpret the language and that, because the old man spoke cool and could speak English, but not a lot. So he took my great-grandpa D.K., and when they enrolled him as D.K. Lone Wolf, and I wanted to pass that on. And I think the reason why I was glad to share this was that in my family, we were raised to help and serve our community. We tried to do it in whatever capacity we could, and that the principles and the guidance and the way they did it was not only very traditional, but it was also, with that in mind, was to serve and help. So in my lifetime, as I'm talking to you a little bit about this, about my life and the values and principles, I followed the same thing. I've done a lot in my life. I was raised when I was born. I was raised and by my grandpa and grandma. You know, the pandemic that we had back then, tuberculosis, was affecting both my mom and dad. And my mom had TB for 16 years before she was, before they had the cure, and she was dismissed out of the TB SAN. And Norman and I, she and dad, through that process, they filled good for a while, and they let those with TB go. Well, and go out. But my mother got married during that period of time, and she had two children, and that was Norman and I. And so we were raised by grandparents. I was raised until I was 3 years old. So I felt always at home down there. I loved my grandma so much and my grandpa. And so I was with them all the time, didn't know that they had actually taken me out of the hospital. Norman, too. He stayed with my dad's side, my grandma Eunice, until she passed away. And then a lot of the aunts and my grandparents on the Botone side, they kept Norman too. So we were raised like that in that environment and system. So we were used to doing what we did in our jobs, how we behaved. They were always, you know, I grew up because grandma and grandpa were in the clergy. I grew up, I knew when people came to the door, I had to go in the back. And, you know, and of course, back in those days, among our people, the sermons, everything we did in the church, they do it in Kiowa. They spoke Kiowa. Everybody talked Kiowa. And you would think that I would have learned a lot, but I didn't learn as much as I needed to learn. I would, and I think learning is a huge, that, I know one of the questions, Mary Helen, was what advice, and my advice to anybody is to continue to learn it at every age level and in every way we can, because right now I'm asked to do everything in my family, and I'm thankful that I was raised around our people, so I understood it, I understand it. What was appropriate, what you do, who you go to. So I'm so thankful for that. We lived in Oklahoma City. I was raised there. And after my mother was dismissed from the TV stand, they raised us. My dad was a barber in Oklahoma City. And I was raised there in public schools. So we were caught in the middle of that, you know, the change of the culture. And but we always leaned. We were Kiowas. We went home probably every other weekend. We were involved not only in our church here, which was an intertribal church in the Oklahoma City area, but also back home. And my grandfather had pastored so many of the churches down there. So we were used to that kind of a environment. And the principles were real basic, was to help people, to serve your community, to do things properly because you're kind of a role model. And all these things that, to me, helped me in growing up. I think the other question, Mary Helen, that you asked was, how the teachings that I received impacted my life. Well, it impacted everything I did. I retired from my work in the Bureau of Indian Education. I was a public school teacher in Kansas. Daryl and I, he was able to, when he went back into the military up in North Dakota, he moved down and got to Kansas, and I went up to Kansas. Then we became parents to Chuck and Michelle. And when that happened up there in Kansas, we really realized that I got a job by a little town. We were living in Hiawatha, Kansas. And there really is a Hiawatha, Kansas. So there was a school, the Kickapoo Nation School, a small school that I had taught in public schools, but I had never taught to Indian students. And that was my first time. I went to the school and got a job there. And I loved it. And I, from then on, I stayed in Indian education. and wanted to. I went from there to Haskell. So I've taught at many different levels of Indian education. And we spent 31 years outside of Oklahoma. Many people said, "You mean you were gone all that time?" And I said, "Yeah, I was gone." They said, "Well, we saw you all the time." But because, of course, we were very involved in dancing. My children, my daughter danced. My husband, after he retired in Albuquerque, came home to work for his tribe, the tribe Cheyenne and Arapaho. So we were very involved politically and in our work. So Daryl, he retired from the military and from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And then I finally left the BIE, an administrator, but I left as the budget officer for the Bureau of Indian Ed. I handled I think if you have a background in math and so forth, they'll put you where they think you can be. But I did that for years, overseeing the funding that went to our Indian schools, tribally controlled schools, and also the BIA schools like Riverside. So I was all over the place. And my work involved all of the basic principles that I grew up with. I found that and learned a lot of things in my work and working with schools. Tribally controlled schools are just the schools that are, you give the money to them and they run their own school. Yeah. Well, many of them are successful, but some are not. And I had to, my staff and I, we went forward and had to do all kinds of trainings and views and audits. So I'm used to that side of the government, but I was a math nerd. I think that's what they called me. So anyway, that's what I did. So okay. Everything that I did impacted that.
Yeah. All right. Well, friend, I thank you, and we're just about to run out of time for this segment. And
okay.
So, but my son, I'll have to talk to you privately, but my son wanted to ask a question about Sundance on Cobbin Land. But we can talk about that on another place.
Okay.
And thank you, friend, for all
your
advice.
And I know a lot.
Yeah.
Sundance.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate all this and your advice to the kids of today. That's important to continue to learn. So thank you, Frienda,
absolutely.
And I'll see you down the road.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
Frienda, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to be on our show. I also, too, am a descendant of Chief Apitone. So that was Frienda Flyingman, and she was here as our Kiowa Elder of the Week. And we're going to move on to our next segment, where we've got Lawrence Spotted Bird, announced chairman for Kiowa Tribe, and he's here to discuss his next segment of his part of his plan for the future of the Kiowa. Lawrence, go ahead and take it away.
Aho, greetings and salutations. Hey, you know, previously I talked about the components of the vision that I'm going to start with. And, of course, once we get into it, it's going to be the tribe's vision, because people are going to have the opportunity to provide their input, feedback, and comments, because it can't be one person. It has to be all of our vision. And so I want to stress that it's not – we have to start somewhere. So I'm going to bring in the components of that to the tribe as a starting point, but also too, I'm a big advocate for planning. In my business development experience, you can't start a business without a good plan, and banks won't loan you money anyway if you don't have a business plan. And tribal governments, by the same token, should have a plan as well, and we have to have a plan. The Kiowas have to have a plan. I think I haven't noticed any of our previous leaders or current leaders even talk about a plan. They just kind of wing it, and you can't really run anything like that. You have to step back, plan things out, vet the strengths and weaknesses and the assets and the things that you have and the people that you have, the resources that you have, and utilize those in a well-developed plan. So planning can be a big component of my administration when I come in here, and also stress that it's going to be with the Kiowa-led management team, because I believe there's a lot of professional Kiowas who would come back and work in this administration if we show them that we have the ability to plan, but also the ability to implement it and the experience to implement it in a good way, an effective way. So that's going to be the key component. But I want to focus kind of on the philosophical side of it that I think is causing some of our problems, not only with our tribe, but many tribes around the country. And we got to, as adult Indian people, as adult Kiowa people, especially if we become elected or appointed into a leadership role, if we got to be a good role model for our peers, our tribal members, and especially our youth, we got to be the role model, a good role model, because we all know that alcohol and drug abuse is still destroying our tribe, as it is probably all the 574 tribes that are recognized by the government. Every one of those communities are negatively impacted by drugs and alcohol, and we have to do something about it. We can't throw up our hands and accept it as a normal way of life. So we as leaders and adults need to set the example and break that cycle now. And I wanted to initiate some definitive components for that. Myself, as elected chairman, I will myself sign a contract pledging, to lead an ethical, sober, alcohol and drug-free life at all times during the tenure of my position, and I would expect that of the vice chair, as well as encourage the legislators and other employees, key employees, and all employees. I just recently found out that there's a code of professional ethics that was developed by our elders, our leaders who are gone now, and they developed this, and it's a memorialized on a plaque inside the entrance of the tribal complex, and I didn't know it was there until it was brought to my attention. It floored me because our elders knew that we had a problem. We had to operate in an ethical way, and many of those elders did. Many of them led drug and alcohol-free lives, dedicated to their belief and their connection to God, and so we need to get back to that. We need to learn from those guys, our elders that are gone. They taught us that. They taught our parents, our grandparents, who taught us. And we know better. We've been taught that. They educated us. They informed us. And we need to respect that. We need to remember the good things that our elders put in place for us. And this code of professional ethics is a powerful starting point for not only our tribal leaders, but all of our employees to adopt and incorporate into their day-to-day operations in overseeing and working for the tribal government. Because first and foremost, we can never forget that we're not there to serve ourselves, to get a paycheck and go on work 8 to 5 or whatever. No, we're there to serve and provide for the needs of our tribal people, tribal members that have needs. And we all know our tribal members all over the country have many needs. And right now, we're not able to provide for those needs because we're barely able to stand up on our own as a solid, healthy tribal government. And so we need to get ourselves cleaned up and organize ourselves. I'm saying people, individuals, adults, men and women, and start leading ourselves in a life that we can model our children to follow. That's going to be a key philosophy that I want to bring to our tribe, because we got to stop this craziness that we've are seeing now and have seen. We got to stop it, and we got to be the role model, and we got to break the cycle of alcohol and drug abuse. And so that's going to be a very key component of this administration as we get ourselves organized. And so I just want to point that out that. I have experience, and a lot of our professionals have experience in our strengths in certain areas: finance, the management, planning, development, business development, and so forth, and legal, medical fields, teachers. We need to embrace those Kiowa professionals and bring them back to help us move our tribe forward. But we can't do that until we clean our act up, clean our government up, and build up the philosophy that people know that we're serious and doing things right once and for all. And so I really feel very strongly about that, because we can't try to fake something. We got to be real. We got to be sincere. People got to know what's in our heart, because they see ourselves and the way we carry out our duties in our life every day. We can't go off on trips and think that we're away so we can act crazy. And so we can't do that, because other leaders around the country see us at these events or these conferences. And what are they going to say? Well, they're going to question our tribe and the ethical leadership that we may or may not portray. And so we got to be upstanding to our peers with other tribes in order to build respect and their willingness to support us if we need to draw upon the support and the partnership from other tribes around the country as we come to the table. And we got to be at the table. We can't just go to these conferences or NCAI and not be at the table. I mean, we're not doing the tribe a service if we just go to have a subsidized trip out of it and party when we're there. We've got to break that. We've got to be serious about it. And NCAIs and all the other tribes have to see that the Kiowas are now at the table in discussions, bringing the interest of the tribal people in Southwest Oklahoma and wherever they may be to the table, so that we can look out for the best interest of our people, because it's a big responsibility. I'm not sure what our tribal enrollment is. It's kind of like a moving target, I think, when I ask people, but let's say 13,000-14,000. We got a lot of people, and this is a big responsibility. So a leader that's elected needs to know that the scope and the responsibility is great, but there are people that are willing to carry the load if we lead them in the right way, in a good way. And so I just want to point the philosophical approach that I would like to bring to the leadership of a tribe, the Kiowa tribe, and build ourselves up to where people can respect us as a tribe and respect us as leaders, and our own people can respect us as their leaders. So I want to point that out. So I hope. Thank you for the time, and look forward to talking to you all again soon. I hope.
All right, Lawrence, thank you for those wise words and your plan for the tribe, and we'll talk to you next week, and we'll hear some more of your plan. Next up, we have the legislative update, and we've got Anita Johnson on the line. So, Anita, go ahead and take away your 10 minutes.
Okay, this is just a few things in my representation in District 5. We've had two attempts at passing a budget this year, and both of those attempts have been vetoed by the chairman and then presented, brought up to the legislature for veto override, which requires, in the veto override, it requires that six legislators vote an affirmative vote out of the seven legislators. And at both of those attempts, we've had less than six vote. We've had five vote yes at one, and then four vote yes at the other. So we have failed to pass those veto overrides for the budget. And within that budget, it called for the ARP money, which the tribe has not voted a budget that contains the ARP money to even distribute yet. But, you know, our people are in need. So we did not say anything against that distribution and at this point. And we tried to get $3,000 per Kiowa tribal member, whether it was 80 years old or 2 days old, whether they were a baby or an older person across the board, because every enrolled Kiowa was counted as in that in that distribution count. So we felt, the legislature felt like each one should got an equal amount of money assistance from the Kiowa tribes proportion of the allocation of money from the ARPA funding. The other thing that's pending right now is, well, we've just done one, which is we had a legislative order session this past Tuesday, and it was for the purpose of selecting an interim coordinator until the annual meeting of April 22. And all the whereas is down the page, and then it come up with the KIC coordinator serves an important role in accepting proposed resolutions for consideration by the KIC, providing notice of upcoming KIC meetings of proposed resolutions, and to otherwise maintain the office of counsel. And since the Constitution was approved in 2017 after the date of annual meeting of KIC, the legislature pursuant to his authority to call special meetings of the KIC has determined that is in the best interest of the members of the tribe to call a special meeting of KIC for purposes of selecting a coordinator. It is now therefore resolved that the legislature pursuant to Article 5, Section 4B of the Constitution hereby calls a special meeting of Kiowa Indian Council for November 20th, 2021, beginning at 9 a.m. for the sole purpose of selecting a coordinator for the KIC as called for by the Constitution. We voted on that in this legislative order session on October the 26th, and we had 4 in favor and 2 opposed. Districts 1 opposed and 4 opposed. Districts 2, districts 5, 6, and 7 supported. And so we feel like that attempt failed, but in my mind, I'm thinking there's a little bit of not really understanding about the Constitution requirements under the legislative powers. So I do believe that we may attempt that again, which legislative orders can be brought up at any time with some notification to the legislator. But under the powers, Section 6, it does say under the D area, it says the legislature shall have the power to override an executive veto by 6 affirmative votes from the legislators present. And that's only in the veto, executive veto, for an override of the executive veto. And under the E section, it says during the official session of the legislature, a quorum of 4 legislators shall be required to pass bills pursuant to the legislative process. All that is under the section above it is C. The legislature has the power to pass legislative orders to approve internal administrative and operational matters and other specified matters. The legislative order shall be used by the legislature to approve or reject the veto override of a law or budget, to call special meetings of the council, and to confirm or deny nominations made by the chairman. The legislature may, upon reasonable notice, convene at any time to consider and approve legislative orders. A legislative order passed by the legislature shall not be presented to the chairman for signature or veto. So that section there is before the sections, other 2 sections I just read, not sections, I'm sorry, but inserts. And so I think, in my mind, I'm thinking that a quorum of 4 legislators is good enough to pass this this particular legislative order so that the KIC can have a coordinator to get us through to April, thereby setting up the KIC meeting. Otherwise, There's no one to take the resolutions. There's no one to get the meeting set up. There's not anyone to do the groundwork prior to April's meeting. And you have to have somebody there to do all that. And that's the only way to get that done is to for the legislator to call that special session. Do that by a special session and get that interim coordinator in there. And then prior to that, the regular way to get a coordinator by making an application or sending a letter of interest in to the chairman, and the chairman doing what he has to do to bring that forward to the KIC at the April meeting, the KIC going ahead with their selection as they usually do in April at the April meeting. That's how it's supposed to run, and this just gets them to that point so that the KIC can go ahead and select their coordinator, which they'll do with this special meeting anyway. They'll get this interim in there to get us through to the main meeting in April. But the reasoning I heard the other day for not voting for this was that the constituents, the legislators involved would not have any explanation as to why they were going against the Constitution, the legislators. And my explanation was, you know, I don't think there's a KIC member around that doesn't want to have a meeting in April. I think everybody wants to have a meeting. There hadn't been a meeting in 2 years now, and KIC deserves their a portion of the government. They need to be represented. They need their meeting. KIC needs to have a meeting, and so I feel very firmly that we need to pass this legislative order, and that's what I've got to say today.
You know, I wanted to ask you, the only reason that I can think of that they're voting no is the chairman doesn't want there to be a KIC meeting. What do you think?
Well, the chairman is a Kiowa just like the rest of us. It just counts one vote. And, you know, I just count one vote and you do too. So the KIC is a big mass of people, and they need a voice. And the KIC portion of the government of the Kiowa tribe is the voice of the whole Kiowa tribe.
You're right. I agree. All right, Anita, thank you for your wise words and your update, and we look forward to hearing from you next week. This next portion of our show is we're going to go to our interim speaker of the legislature, Jacob Sotai. Jacob, go ahead, and it's your time.
Good morning, sir. Thank you very much. And I don't have a lot additionally to add to Legislator Johnson's segment, other than that I was disappointed. We did have the opportunity to override two vetoes, one dealing with the revised ordinances, election ordinances, and the other to modify our current budget. And it could have been, we could have easily have done that, except for the two mentioned earlier. For whatever reason, we really need explanations, but that's on them to provide that. You know, but their reluctance to support much needed legislation, especially I will reiterate. Ms. Johnson's statement about the KIC, we could easily call for, and that's nothing that is controversial, the meeting itself. Now, there may be some elements that emanate from that meeting that could be controversial, but it's much needed. We've delayed for 2 years the opportunity for that fourth branch of our government to gather and to voice their opinions and their votes, because they actually have an opportunity through resolutions and through their participation to express themselves toward, and they have done that. They have voted. We've got laying on the table votes on changing the blood quantum, votes to conduct a forensic audit that was passed. And there's really no excuse for those two things not to have occurred in these past 2 years that they were on the table. They were voted on. They were approved by the KIC through resolution. And it's just a shame that the voice of the people is not able to move forward in our government for reasons that are unexplained. And we'll just have to continue to try to assert the role that we have. We did vote to call for the meeting. It was passed by a quorum, 4-2. But according to the Constitution, it has to be a 6-6 members of the legislature to approve calling for that meeting. But, you know, these are unique times. And I think that there may need to be consideration for that because address that issue through adapting, because you know, we've had numerous violations of the Constitution these past 3 years, and because we don't have a court, that cannot be interpreted in that manner. And the same could be said for the calling of the KIC meeting with just a quorum, a 4-2 vote, because, you know, that's an essential part of our government. And we need to select a coordinator to get that processed and through so that we can submit resolutions, we can call for meetings, special meetings through the coordinator. So, you know, it's a quandary we find ourselves in. And,
Jacob?
Yes.
If the legislature has trouble that the chairman refuses to meet with you and the coordinator has trouble getting the chairman to meet, then what is to happen? You know, the Constitution says the meeting must be at tribal headquarters. Doesn't say that for the special meeting, but it does say that six people have to call for a special meeting. But if the chairman just shuts the doors to communication, and then nothing can get done by anybody. You can elect six new people, and it's not going to happen if the chairman refuses to communicate. And it seems to me that that's what's happening.
The KIC can step forward and obtain 400 signatures. So there still is an avenue to get that done. And it just needs, someone just needs to initiate that action. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can't overcome that. There's no way to forestall that. Uh-huh. If we have 400 people that are willing to sign their signatures.
Okay.
That may be the way we should go.
And then...
Right. I think that there's enough dissatisfaction out there and frustration that the KSC's voice has not been heard. Mm-hmm. That should be an obtainable number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and don't forget, in this past 2.5 years, COVID's been in there where the complex has been closed. And just for clarification, it is Kyle Tattlety in District 1 and Jesse Sweetock in District 4 that are voting against the people's wishes. Is that true?
That's correct. That is correct.
All right. Jacob, you have any more other thoughts this Saturday morning?
No, but if the constituents in those districts are displeased, they need to express themselves.
I agree with you.
Yes, so you know that's the way you get a responsive government. Now, whether or not they hear it and have enough integrity to express the voice of the people from what they hear in their districts, that's another story.
All right. Okay, Jacob, thank you for those fine words. I'm going to go ahead and read the writing on a plaque that Dr. Kennedy gave at a meeting the other night. And this plaque is sitting in Red Buffalo Hall. It is the Code of Professional Ethics. And it is hanging in the wall, and it was approved by the Kiowa Business Committee in January 26, 1984. And our ancestors knew that there had been problems and there will be problems again. Number one, the Kiowa tribal government personnel shall exemplify loyalty to the highest degree toward the Kiowa tribe's governmental organization. Two, uphold the constitution, policies, and procedures of the Kiowa tribe and never be part of their downgrade. Three, exert the best thought, effort, and performance of duties for a full day's wage. Four, be aware of implementing more efficient and economical ways of completing an activity. Five, never consider special favors or privileges to anyone. Also, never accept for the individual self family members favors for any reason for which may be disinterpreted as misbehavior influencing the performance of tribal government duties. Six, never make a private binding promise to the duties of any office, since a tribal employee or Kiowa business committee member has no private words which can bind public duty. Never enter into any business matters or for with any Kiowa tribal government to cause hindrance or performance of duties. Eight, never use information confidentially gained while performing tribal government duties as a means for self-gain, monetary or otherwise. Nine, report any and all irregularities observed. 10, be mindful to uphold the code of ethics. Public service is a public trust. Our ancestors knew before, and they know now. And here they are speaking to us from the grave. Mary Helen, I know that we've got a couple of announcements, so why don't you go ahead and do the one for later today.
Okay. Gives Water Service Club is having a Halloween dance later today in Ponca City. They're having a costume contest, a winner take all, the witches cackle. Then 2 o'clock is the gourd dance, 5 is potluck dinner, 6 is a wolf dance. They're having raffles. So if you're in and around Ponca City or you want to make that travel up there, hurry up because they're having a dance.
All right, next thing on Sunday, tomorrow, we've got a round robin hand game tournament at Carnegie Park. Drawing is at 2 o'clock. There'll be raffles, grocery baskets. Place will be determined by the sponsors and team captains. Please contact Cletus Gayton for more information, and this is very important. His phone number is 580-654-0069. They are not responsible for divorces, breakups, or getting stranded, and everyone makes sure they have a great time. So that closes out our show. Koigu Bay Kale Day. Kiowa's standing together. We would like to thank our guest, Franda Flying Man, for speaking today, as well as all the Koigu for tuning in to our program on KACO, New Country 98.5 FM, Apache, Lawton, Fort Sill. Please pray for the Kiowa people, and as J.T. Goombai would say, Goombai for now.
The previous was a paid program, and the opinions expressed within it are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of KACO Radio or Mullman Media management and staff.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. 1 in 3. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man. Your worst man. You, your dog walker. Your cat jogger. While 1 in 3 adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. That's doihaveprediabetes.org.
Wait, did they just say 1 in 3 adults has prediabetes? That's 33.33333% of adults. That means it could be me, my boss, or my boss's boss, or me, my favorite sister, or my other sister. That's 7 members of my 21-person romantic book club. Wait, the 1 in 3 could be me, my karaoke partner Carol, or my karaoke enemy Jeff. I'm going to take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its pre-diabetes awareness partners.